Welcome to The More Perfect Union, the podcast that offers real debate without the hate. From the right side of the political spectrum, we have...
Jay McGuire, a progressive conservative from Suffolk, Virginia. Warning, I'm sober today.
And from the left side, we have...
Greg Matuszak, a common sense liberal who is forming an explanatory committee to say bad words in public from Cincinnati, Ohio.
And Kevin Kelton, a passionate moderate from Los Angeles, California, although in 2 hours I'll be on my way to sunny Palm Springs, California for my first vacation in over a week.
Look at you.
And I'm Rebecca Kushmiter, a progressive feminist from Kensington, Maryland, and I don't have any vacations, any exploratory committees or anything good going on. I feel left out.
We'll find.
Well, you can come with me, Rebecca.
I can come with you if I can get to sunny Los Angeles in the next 20 minutes.
Right.
And as you know, all of our bios and commentaries that we've written are on the moreperfectunionpodcast.com. Has anyone written anything in the past week or two?
No.
Or have we all been on a break?
It's the New Year's. I've mostly been swearing in public. And
of our resolutions are to do less.
Oh, yes.
I thought I was going to write an article, and then I decided it was better as a mini podcast. So if you go back about a week to New Year's Eve, maybe, you can find a 3-minute little audio clip of me woman-splaining to my esteemed colleagues here. Why I think they were wrong when they said I was wrong about something.
And it was a very good little podcast.
Oh, I'm sorry. Rebecca,
That was misogynistic for me to call it a little podcast. I meant a short podcast.
It was little. It was literally about 3.5 minutes long. It's
Rebecca.
It's like reading one of my blog posts, but if I do it for you.
Rebecca, was I supposed to listen to that?
No.
I will say this. I love Rebecca's writing, and so I thought it was well written. I can't say I did get a phone call from certain family members who didn't find it as charming as I did, but I will say it was well written, and it's always enjoyable because I always find her stuff delightful. I said that
Thank
before.
Yes, delightful. That's gonna be my new description for myself: the delightful feminist from Kensington.
Delightful feminist.
I like it.
Yeah, I also last week I put up a post on the website about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which Trump did not kill. It actually has gone on without us, and I lamented that painful fact.
And I agree with you. Well, speaking of things to lament, we have a government shutdown going. I believe we're now in day 16 or 17, but who's counting except every single cable network?
I was talking to our pediatrician this week, and I told her to be on the lookout for shutdown babies in about 40 weeks. You get families where two parents are furloughed and stuff just starts happening.
Wow.
Well, as you guys know, my prediction still stands. I think Trump is going to get more than the $1.3 billion, and he's going to call it a win. But what do you guys think? Where are we? Is it a strike or is it a shutdown? I found that really weird that he wants to call it a strike.
I think you know, that's where most of my profanity came from when he said, "Don't worry, these people aren't on shutdown. They're striking for this wall because that's what, you know, these 800,000 federal workers are and their families aren't getting paid for because they're on strike because they believe in this," which is
not a strike. It's a lockdown.
It's a lockdown.
It's a lockout.
Well. And he has no concept of these things. And the way he bends the truth is just amazing. And one of the things that happened this week was that Pence came to him and his own party said, "Hey, we have a way for you to get out. $2.5 billion, and the Democrats said, "Yeah, we can live with this." And he said, "No, who came to me? This is a dumb idea."
Are you sure about that, Greg?
That was
because
Pence.
Met with Pence about 8 days ago on that.
Yeah.
But he offered 2.5. The Democrats turned him down. I don't think Trump turned that
down.
I think the Democrats
down.
Both Pence got himself turned down by both. First, really? The Democrats said no, and then it got leaked out, and Trump said no. I didn't act. No, I
no,
only.
But of course, Pence wouldn't go there and cowboy it. Of course, Trump okayed it until they get rejected.
Oh yes, Trump. Oh yes, Pence would go out there and cowboy it.
Oh yeah,
because it's a typical Republican establishment move where they think they can come up with something and then put a blinder on Trump, and then he reminds them, "No, I'm Donald Trump. I'm going to do whatever the f I want." Pence et al. Still don't get it. They don't get a lot of things. You should have seen the look on Kevin McCarthy's face when Trump talked about the military version of eminent domain and essentially throwing people out of their homes on the border, the American side of the border, mind you, so that he could build his beloved wall. They still have not come to terms with what is actually going on. Which is frightening and hilarious in its own way, shape, and form. But no, would not surprise me at all that Pence would throw a number out and then try to bring it back to Trump and call it a victory and then have the whole thing blow up in his face, because that's what they do.
I've just got to say that all these people who've been stockpiling guns for fear of a tyrannical government, you know, this is their moment. This is their time to shine when the military version of eminent domain shows up and starts digging a trench for a wall on their grazing land for their herd.
Oh, yeah. Where are all the Jade Helm nutsos?
Yeah, come on.
Talking about how the government is going to start seizing people's property. Well, Donald Trump just talked about seizing people's property all along the border with Mexico. And not a single one of them has uttered a peep in protest.
This is true.
Okay, so the other big news this week, Trump defending the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. And he says, Iran can do whatever they want in Syria. What a nice guy. What a peace-loving man. He's the Mahatma Gandhi of the 21st century.
Yeah, this is when
he's
Bibi
the Mahatma Gandhi of the Trump family.
This is when Benjamin Netanyahu suddenly discovered he was vendor number 1,602, because he's next to get stiffed by Donald Trump. That one press conference, that one cabinet meeting that was aired, it was about 90 minutes long. It had the Game of Thrones poster that referenced sanctions that actually came into effect in November. And he managed to frighten Israel, insult India, and do both to the Afghan people in less than 90 minutes. Now, to some extent, that's an accomplishment.
That's gifted.
But it's not an
accomplishment.
That's gifted. Yeah, that's gifted bad.
Yes.
It would be gifted if he used those powers for good.
Yes.
However, he has chosen to, you know, fight on the side of evil.
I would be happy if Donald Trump just used his powers for neutral.
or just used his powers for silence. Like, if he could just shut up. I mean, that's the problem. He has been on TV a lot lately, and he just keeps talking.
Can we talk
about himself when he does that?
But okay. The reason why I insisted we talk about this is because it's a reminder of two things. One, that there are a lot of people on the right who are rather upset at Donald Trump, but there are nowhere near as many as should be, because this is the kind of thing that should have gotten Donald Trump thrown out of the Republican Party. Not something that he could have survived, and he would still be considered its leader, number one. Number two, it shows, again, his preference and his predilection for dictators and tyrants, and that has real-world implications. There are over a million Muslims being interred in internment camps all over China and occupied East Turkestan. They call it Xinjiang province. And Donald Trump has not said a word about it. And it's probably because if he ever did say a word about it, he would probably praise the Chinese Communist Party for it, because the same nonsense that he came up with about the Soviets being right to be in Afghanistan. It is why Donald Trump will be perfectly happy to let Bashar Assad crush the Syrian people. It is why he likes Vladimir Putin, no matter what Vladimir Putin did for his campaign. I mean, Erdogan, if anything, Vladimir Putin is probably looking at what Erdogan is getting, at what Duterte is getting, at what Kim Jong-un is getting, about what Xi Jinping is getting, and he's thinking to himself, well, shit, I spent a whole lot of money I didn't need to.
So
yeah, that's depressing, but also very true.
Yeah. Can we talk about, there's two things that we kind of glossed over, which are kind of mind-boggling. One was the fact that he was making fun of the Indian Prime Minister for building schools. I think, like that is like cartoon. That's like a movie bad guy or like a comedy. Like, oh, how funny that you would actually do something nice. I mean, like he should be ashamed of building schools in Afghanistan. And he made fun of him for doing that, which I still haven't wrapped my head around. And then the second thing, and I know this is why you wanted to talk about this so badly, DJ, is the poster, which. which for the record, it's so absurd, but for the record, he brought it out, he put it on the desk, he didn't even hang it up behind him, but then he didn't talk about it, he didn't mention it, like, did everyone see my glorious poster, it's the best Photoshop ever, he didn't talk about it, he didn't even say...
He didn't have to, we're talking about it for him, that's what he wants.
I know, but...
But it was such a Kim Jong-un moment, it was a Mao moment, it was either this poster of his own face.
I know, but he didn't end his speech, and sanctions are coming. He didn't even, it was just sort of like,
sanctions
have
already come.
It's just so weird that he would just like, he was like, as he was walking out of his office, he goes, hey, bring that poster, it's pretty cool.
Well, I mean, let's keep in mind, this is the same man who had his foundation shut down because the only thing he ever did with it was buy portraits of his own head.
I would love to have dinner with many, many members of Congress and Senate, both sides. I'd have very little problems, and I know that we could reach common ground talking about family and about, we would, I mean, both sides. And like I've said, Lindsey Graham is by far top of my list of Republicans I'd love to have because I'm sure he's fascinating. But I can't imagine having a lunch or a beer or anything with Donald Trump without it just going bonkers crazy.
Oh, I could. I would actually, although I really dislike the guy as strongly as you could dislike anybody who's never done a violent act.
Sure.
I would have lunch with him, and I think it would be fascinating. First of all, from everything I've read, to the extent that it's correct, he's actually much more charming when he's not doing all this stuff in public. Mm-hmm. And secondly, he would just talk, and you'd get to experience everything that we've heard about, the ranting, the you know, the segues that don't make any sense. I'd love to experience that.
I'm
afraid he'd grab me by the pussy.
Yeah.
I'm afraid he'd grab me by the penis.
Yeah, it's not outside the realm of possibility. He's admitted to it.
Yeah, that maybe that's what's on the tape that the Russians have.
Hey, I want to circle back because I think I shortchanged our conversation about the wall and that whole thing.
Probably.
Yeah.
So there were some aspects of it that we wanted to talk about, like will state governments have any standing if Congress, you know, takes them to court and the courts, you know, may or may not intercede? And, you know, what will happen if the Army Corps of Engineers show up in Texas and start just trying to, you know build on ranchers.
There's a really good article in The Atlantic, and I haven't read it all as thoroughly as I should. I skipped over some parts because they were talking about, like, is there an internet kill switch that the president could, you know, flip to cut off communication in a state of emergency. But they were talking about, you know, the history of states of emergency and how they get declared all the time. And right now we're under 30. Did you know that? There are 30 active states of emergency that have been declared by past administrations. So, well,
Mississippi has been a state of emergency since about 1929.
Longer than that, actually, if we're going to be making jokes about Mississippi here. But
no kidding.
Yeah, I'd go as far back as 1861 myself.
Yeah. When was it founded? That's the date. But one of the things, because there have been some pretty dicey things done under the guise of a state of emergency, including things like Japanese internment, there are controls in place that have never been exercised because usually a state of emergency is declared for legitimate reasons. So Congress has some oversight on states of emergency. They can meet at least once every 6 months to review and potentially suspend a state of emergency. And I think if Trump tried to do that regarding the border situation, he would find himself facing a vote, at least in the House, to suspend the state of emergency. You know, and the other thing is, yeah, would governors be able to sue for an injunction to get any construction stopped? And if he was attempting to build on private lands, like as we said, how is that going to look if you start rolling in the Army Corps of Engineer backed up by border security, backed up by military police or whatever force he would use to protect his building crews? If he was rolling onto private property and taking land by force, what are the optics on that?
They're not good. Would he use eminent domain first to get legal
eminent domain first? But even the optics on that aren't very good. If he starts trying to take ranch land in Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, he's going to be in big trouble. That doesn't look good. If you stroll in, offer under market rates for property that isn't actually for sale, and try and build a wall on it when there is no data showing that the wall will work.
Yeah, there will. It as that line from that line from Oh God, You Devil. There will be lawsuits. There will be fights. It'll be fabulous.
Did you just quote George Burns?
Yes, I did.
Great reference.
But, DJ, that's a blast from a lot of past.
Yes, it is. because as my D&D group reminded me yesterday, I'm old. There would be lawsuits from private landowners. Their states would almost certainly get involved. They would have lawsuits.
Okay, Congress Newsom is not going to let Trump start building in California. Yeah, it's not going to happen.
There will be suits. I would. It would not surprise me if even Greg Abbott or the Texas Attorney General also files a lawsuit. Congress can file suit under the Anti-Deficiency Act, because there's the question of what expenditures. If Trump uses the military, then the question is, what budget line is he using? If the military does not have a dedicated budget line for this, granted them by Congress, Congress can sue under the Anti-Deficiency Act. And in fact, when the House of Representatives sued President Obama in 2013 and 2014, when the president tried to essentially re-legislate Obamacare on the fly, numerous times the House actually won in court on some of those issues. It would not surprise me if a Pelosi-led House would, using the Anti-Deficiency Act, would say, yeah, the president has no authority to spend money that we didn't allocate for this. And the courts could very well say, yeah, you're right. He can't do that.
It's true. That's all possible. But it appears that Mitch McConnell is just going to sit silent for as long as possible on anything related to the wall. Because
Mitch McConnell is doing exactly what Harry Reid started 8 years ago, which is make sure that no outside of executive branch nominations, no votes will be held on anything in the United States Senate ever again until January of 2021.
Correct. That's what Harry Reid did. It's what Mitch McConnell's doing. You know, and in a lot of cases, Senate Majority Leader is correct to put on the brakes. I often say the House is where crazy comes out to play. The Senate is where crazy goes to die. You can see a lot of weird shit disappear into the bowels of the Senate committees. But right now, you know, with bipartisan government, we are going to see everything grind to a halt in the Senate because Mitch McConnell is just not going to put it on the schedule. Well, and the other thing to remember is that this administration is very concerned with optics. And when right now we're hearing from, you know, unnamed senior White House officials that they are consulting with lawyers and whomever else on the feasibility of declaring a state of emergency and just starting to build, what they're trying to figure out is how to do it without pushback. So anything they end up doing under one of these states of emergency, which is at this point still entirely hypothetical, could be so limited in scope as to be inconsequential to us. However, it's not a great precedent to be setting. But he might, you know, entirely confine any construction that actually happens to lands that the federal government can do whatever they want on without any other jurisdiction trying to fight him on it.
Now, you still run into Anti-Deficiency Act issues. You still run into appropriation issues.
Right, but those are so procedural that optically nobody cares. I'm talking about what he doesn't want to see are protests like we saw at the airport protests with the Muslim ban, and he certainly doesn't want massive lawsuits, filed by Javier Becerra and whoever the current attorney general is in Texas.
Oh, those are going to happen anyway. I think the fact of the matter is, even if he says it's only going to be on federal land, the states in which that federal land, the states in which the federal land is, I can't come up with a verb, sorry. They are not going to stand.
I was talking to a federal employee yesterday, actually, and pretty much everyone is assuming March is when this will all finally come to some sort of crisis point.
Oh, I disagree. Yep. I see before that. I can't see it going.
I think it's going into March or later. Yeah.
Yeah, I think March too. But that's what federal employees think. They don't.
Again, but let's
for the
talk about
babies in 40 weeks. Woohoo!
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye! The More Perfect Union is now in session. All rise for real debate without the hate. The Honorable Gregory Thaddeus Matusak, Rebecca Thaddeus Cushmider, and Donald John Thaddeus McGuire presiding.
Let's talk about the positives, at least for those of us who like change and who were happy to see a blue wave coming around the mountain last November. We have a new house, a new speaker, well, a new old speaker, old new speaker.
I was going to say, she's not that old. Wow.
She's pretty old.
Yeah,
she's pretty old. She's pretty amazing,
She's pretty amazing. And now I've got to look up how old Nancy Pelosi is.
I'm guessing 75.
I was just looking up Steny Hoyer's age. He's going to be 80 this year.
She's 78.
78. That was going to be my first guess.
Shocker. Wow.
No, she is, in fact, 78. DJ has faster Google fingers than me.
Or he might just know that.
He might just know that.
He just may
And
know
her
that.
New best friend is one 28-year-old.
30. No, wait. I stand corrected. You're right. Go on.
Ocasio-Cortez. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. The new do you want to dance or can you dance or whatever those shows are. The new star of dance in America. I love that little dance that she did when she was in college.
It was so absurd. It was this guy, this anonymous account on Twitter is like, wait till you see what I've got on AOC.
Right. They tried to make her look like a pole dancer.
Right, and she was on a rooftop with her friends, and they were doing the Breakfast Club dance, and it was just like really cute and fun. We're like, yeah, I'm not scandalized.
So,
I got to say, she has wonderful timing because not only did she use this to counter troll, which is of course something you always love to see, but she used all of this to drop her 70% income tax rate idea, which frankly, I think is a horrible idea.
DJ, qualify it. It's not a 70% income.
Everybody's
tax,
focused on it.
It's a 70%
like, you know what?
Top marginal rate.
On incomes above 10
million.
That's
what I said.
And I still think.
Yeah. That's right. Nobody else knows what I'm talking about when I say that. Yeah, it's the top marginal rate of 70%. But she actually took the opportunity to drop a policy on people and have people argue and discuss policy.
No, let's be clear about that. They just freaked out over.
Well, okay.
Yes.
Yes. I raised issues with the policy on somewhere in Twitter, somewhere, Facebook,
exactly.
And everybody else went all personal, and that's because people are idiots. But yes.
It was well established. DJ.
Okay.
We don't need to reiterate.
People
that.
Are the problem.
Can I ask you a question?
My point is this. She took advantage of the publicity to actually push a policy forward. There are very, very few politicians who are willing to take that chance, and I commend her for doing that.
Hey, DJ, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Cool. This is how we start all the conversations here. We edit this out. We ask. I'm actually drinking tea with a pinky up. So that 70% tax thing's been thrown around my family dinner table like, obviously a communist, obviously a socialist, 70% taxes, but it's not. Like you said, it's 70% marginal, blah, blah, blah. What's
the top 10 people,
the top?
Earnings over $10 million.
So what's
only the earnings that they make over $10
million. So what's the difference? Can you explain in like,
yeah.
Pretend like I actually don't know anything about money.
Yeah, essentially the first thing is the income tax rate the income tax rates are charged at different money levels as you earn them. So the first like $10,000 to $15,000 you earn is taxed at 10%. $15,001 to $30,000 is taxed at 20%. The rates change and the brackets change.
It's
so
what's known as the progressive tax.
That's called a marginal tax. People call it progressive. That's not how progressive tax is defined. It's how a marginal tax is defined. But again, most people are economic illiterate, so they don't understand what these terms are. It's called a marginal tax.
I'm in the room when you say stuff like that.
Yeah, I know. But that was aimed at Kevin, so don't worry about it.
He's talking about you.
No, but seriously, the point is that if you make less than $10 million a year, you would never see 70% of any of your income taxed. You would go at – I don't know what the rest of her, what the other brackets were that she had in mind. I haven't seen any of them, but – I would presume it would be from your millionth dollar earned to your 9.9 millionth dollar earned would be taxed at 39.6%, and then $10,000,001 would be taxed at 70%.
And for the record, let me do a follow up. We've seen 70% marginal.
We've seen 90%. During the Depression, the top marginal rate was in the 90s.
We saw 70% as late as 1980. We saw 91% as late as 1962.
So,
and it was that rate that John Kennedy thought was utterly ridiculous, and he lowered it down to 77 because he noted at the time, and people tend to think this started with Arthur Laffer and Ronald Reagan. It started all the way back with John F. Kennedy. He noted that a tax rate that high encourages tax avoidance. It encourages people to work less and shelter their income in ways that don't get taxed. And a tax rate that high actually leads to less revenue. I did just a quick and dirty analysis. It was a straight up ordinary least squares regression on revenue as a percentage of GDP and top marginal tax rate since 1944, because that was the first withholding year. There is no correlation whatsoever between revenue that the federal government gets and high tax rates. So when most people on the left say, oh, we need to raise income taxes to get more money in for the government, that's not what history shows. Conversely, many on the right who insist that higher taxes can actually lead to decreases in revenue, the data doesn't show that either. The data shows that no matter what tax rate you set, the government is probably going to get the same level of revenue, which is roughly between 17 to 19% of the size of the economy. So
the fact that you did this in your spare time is worth noting.
For the record, I was going to do the same thing. But I decided to take a nap. Okay, so
that Greg has less spare time than I do. So let's not beat up on poor old Greg here.
Yeah.
To make a very long story short, this is an argument about income inequality or that kind of thing. Then we can have that discussion. But Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez specifically came up with this to raise revenue for her Green New Deal plan, which is a whole other mistake. And data shows that revenue is not necessarily going to show up for that.
But should she have been beaten up so badly for it? Or is it just like, just a bad plan?
Was she? Okay, people threw a bunch of idiotic labels at her. Okay, fine. But very few people have actually questioned the wisdom of the plan. All they have done is basically is attempt to – I know, we can cleanse it with fire. Socialist, socialist, socialist. Yeah, that doesn't work, people. It doesn't work because – nobody actually knows what socialist means these days.
Right. You haven't been a Democrat very long. It actually does work. You'd be surprised how easily we get beat up by being called socialists.
Yeah, that hurts.
Bernie Sanders
feelings.
Was the first one to be like, yeah, come at me, bro. I'm a socialist.
That's because Bernie Sanders is – anyway. but it's just, you know, I get throwing labels around, but – When I was a Republican and we got labels thrown at us, we knew we were winning the argument because we could just go, oh, you're burning straw men. Wonderful. Are you going to actually address the policy and address the argument? No? Okay, we win. That's really all Democrats have to do on this, right? Except that this particular policy is wrong for the reasons I mentioned.
Right. Okay, and let's move on, because other things are going to be happening now that this new Congress has been seated, including subpoenas. Boy, they're going to be flying, although for some reason they didn't go after Trump's tax returns yet. What do you think is going on there? I think they're just delaying. I think they're going to do it. They just didn't want to do it the first week out.
They've been lawyering up. All the committees are hiring really good counsel right now. I've been hearing about lawyers who have a really strong history in white collar prosecution that are coming on board as counsel to various committees. So my guess is they are just getting staffed up now, and they're going to start drafting all the necessary documents over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Hmm. I think they're trying not to poke the bear. He keeps bringing up, if you ask about like impeachment and things like that, Trump brings it up more than almost anybody, well, except for new Congresswoman Tlaib.
Rashida
so
Tlaib.
Greg, let me ask you something. When do you think they're going to impeach that mother effer?
So I love the fact that Speaker Pelosi has even said, look, we're not doing that right now. Everyone, relax. This isn't happening until we have facts in front of us. And, you know, Congresswoman...
Meaning the Mueller report.
The Mueller... Yeah. Well...
Or the subpoenas and the testimony.
Or their own investigation.
And she's leaving that open. Right. If the Southern District says, by the way, you know, this is it. You know, they may not need the Mueller report. If they finally see, you know, Trump, you know, with that dagger in his hand and he's, you know, fine. It could happen. So it could happen. But Congresswoman Tlaib ran on the promise of impeaching. In fact, that was her signs everywhere in her district. Impeach the MF. I mean, so...
That's exactly what she had up on signs all over Michigan. She, you know what?
Oh, come on!
She's got a fairly long history in state politics. She was mentored by leaders in the Michigan legislature. She was in leadership in the Michigan legislature, if I recall correctly. I wrote an article about her right after the election. You know, she's not an unserious person. The fact that she dropped an MF bomb and talked about impeachment at a rally with her supporters it should be fairly inconsequential. The fact that people are acting like swearing is somehow unheard of in Washington. They're being naive or they're being jerks.
No, it's the fact that the Trump base, who hears their own president, who hears the head of the party swear all the time, and we have it on video. We have it everywhere, mm-hmm. You know, and then all of a sudden they're like, oh, my goodness. And then for Trump himself to say, well, that dishonors her family. When the man literally has admitted to having an affair with an adult actress while his wife was at home recovering from a pregnancy. What was it? 4 months?
Well, and, better than having an affair with a child actress.
Well, that's true. But
well, the dishonoring your family is such a dog whistle, because that, you know, that's sort of a phrase that in pop culture or popular culture, I should say, is really associated with Muslims. Like, don't dishonor your family. We will have to, you know, honor kill you or whatever. And she is, in fact, Muslim American. She's one of the first two Muslim American women sworn into Congress. She was wearing traditional Pakistani garb at her swearing in. So that was such a subtle little poke at her when he said that you've dishonored your family. However, my guess is she's probably said that word in front of her family before. I bet they know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
I may have said that in front of my own mother this weekend. It's not uncommon.
For his supporters all of a sudden to say, this is just unheard of. I've never, and to forget, to get upset about that is just ludicrous.
Wasn't there a Trump campaign shirt that said Trump 2016, F your feelings?
Yes. And there's the banner my neighbor put out that said Trump 2016, no more BS. Only it said the whole word. And he put it on
his... There's the time that Dick Cheney said to Vermont Senator, not Bernie Sanders, who's the other Vermont Senator?
Patrick Leahy.
Patrick Leahy. He said to him, F you, and I'm using the word F. He used the whole word.
Another
in the Senate.
Time Arkansas away. House Representative called Florida Representative Adam Putnam a howdy doody looking Nimrod. That's in the congressional record. And if you look up Adam Putnam, you'll agree.
Now, let's move on, because we mentioned the I word. You know, nobody's supposed to say that, by the way. You've got to say the I word. Don't say the whole word.
Yeah, you can say MF, but not I.
Right. It's not fit for, public, consumption. But one, Robert Mueller has extended the term of the grand jury that is hearing his various cases for possibly up to 6 months. Obviously, that means that he's not done or near done. And a lot of people think that means that there are more indictments coming. Fingers crossed, fingers crossed, fingers crossed. Roger Stone, Roger Stone, Roger Stone.
Jared. Sorry.
Yeah, that wouldn't be bad either. So what do you guys think? Do you think we'll be getting a report, in the next few weeks? Or is this like another real 6 month run here?
I mean, I think if anything, December taught us that Mueller is not saving things for the report. He is clearly putting a lot of information into documents that he's submitting to judges. These sentencing documents, these recommendations to judges, and probably in the filing documents regarding any current and future indictments, he is putting a lot of that into the judicial record, and it's at the judge's discretion what gets sealed and unsealed. So whether or not we ever see this report, whether this report is coming, the report is not the end-all be-all of Mueller's investigation and his reporting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. I have a theory that it will eventually all come out, and they'll give a copy to Trump beforehand, and Trump will say, look, I'll quit right now, as long as my family does not go to jail, and neither
do I. Never gonna happen.
You say that. You say that, and they'll say, and Pence will say, sure, I'll sign that. Give me.
You are watching the same Donald Trump I'm watching. There is no way this guy will do anything that he thinks humiliates himself. He will never quit. He will never not run for the second term. He doesn't want to be Jimmy Carter. He doesn't want to be Richard Nixon. He would let Jared go to jail before that would happen.
All right.
He would let Jared go to jail, but would he let his business get dismantled fine by fine if the state of New York and the Southern District started finding every single instance of tax evasion and asking for remuneration plus interest, and he was going to walk out of the White House broke is a goddamn joke with the no ability to get credit from anybody in the future.
Right. So for the next episode of our greatest hits, I want you to mark down June 6th, 2019 and say like, oh.
How about January?
Oh!
Yeah, not June here.
I'm actually going to go out on a limb here because I've seen all these reports, these news reports that have said, Mueller's about to wrap up. He's about to issue a report. They all come from the sources close to the investigation. Sources familiar with people close to the investigation, which is a fancy way of saying lawyers for witnesses who are speculating out of their own asses. I actually think Mueller's investigation could very well outlast the Trump administration, with the Stone indictment, with the Corsi indictment, with the action against a foreign state-owned company that is going its way up to the Supreme Court now. I see no reason why Mueller could not be in court cases for at least another 2 years. And it may very well be a situation where he ends up in the same situation that Lawrence Walsh did for the Iran-Contra investigation. Walsh wrapped up his investigation and submitted a report to the Clinton administration early in 1993. It wouldn't surprise me if Mueller just keeps going where the evidence leads him, goes where the cases lead him, and he ends up in a situation where by the time his investigation is actually wrapped up and he can present a final report, it's already 2021, and there's a Democratic president and Democratic attorney general to receive it.
Okay, well, I would like this podcast to end before the end of the Trump administration, so let's move on. Elizabeth Warren formed an exploratory committee this past week. She's been in Iowa. I understand that there's a lot of enthusiasm in that area for her.
Some.
So, guys, what do you think? Does she have a shot? And who's going to announce net? Excuse me. Who's going to announce next?
Of course she has a shot. Anybody entering the race has a shot. Donald Trump proved that to us. There are a lot of positives to Elizabeth Warren. DJ's going to tell me why I'm wrong. If we are headed towards a financial crisis, if we are, you know, reaching a point where individuals can't get credit, interest rates are going up, we're going to start seeing foreclosures and things like that, then Elizabeth Warren is actually as good a person as any to guide us through this. This is her area of expertise. If the coming crisis is foreign relations, you know, maybe I want somebody with more experience in that realm. However, we're not even close to seeing the full complete field of Democratic contenders. So, you know, I think we should just, you know, maybe chill a little.
Yeah. And let's be clear. Elizabeth Warren is no John Mulaney, whose Netflix comedy specials are hilarious.
You're confusing everybody.
Gregory, you are dead to me.
Oh, wait, I meant John Delaney. John Delaney, Congressman.
As a Marylander, I feel like I should somehow defend John Delaney.
You should. You should, because to honest, he's a fine candidate. I mean,
he's a fine congressman. There's nothing wrong with the guy.
No, and that's just the problem. There's nothing wrong with him.
Just that nobody but DJ knows who he is, what he's done, or why we like him.
Right.
So let me ask you guys this. We all know that there's some 20 to 25 potential candidates on the Democratic side. Obviously, it's going to winnow itself down. There's going to be the experienced lane with people like Elizabeth Warren and maybe Joe Biden in that lane. There's going to be the very left lane with Bernie Sanders and maybe Kamala Harris, and I'm probably leaving out one or two other people. Then there's going to be the young, fresh-faced lane, which is going to be everybody else. But everybody, here's my big question. Do the Democrats need a more likable candidate than they nominated the last time? You know, in retrospect, as much as I was behind Hillary Clinton, and I still would have supported Hillary Clinton, I didn't think that her negatives were going to, you know, lose the election for us, and they did. So do Democrats have to look at this race and see, like, who is the one that is least likely to get their negatives taken down by Trump's inevitable onslaught attack? Who is the one who is so likable that they're going to be kind of bulletproof in that regard? Is that a factor?
Well, Trump's not very likable.
No.
I mean, he's not a likable person.
But can Democrats win with a Trump-like candidate? I don't think they can.
Yeah, I would say it's a factor, but it better not be the factor. There have been all sorts of arguments and postmortems about what happened in 2016. But there are two of them that Democrats really have not come to grips with. One is that on one of Donald Trump's chief economic talking points, namely rampant protectionism, Hillary Clinton refused to engage on that argument. And you can't beat something with nothing. It's one of the reasons why I'm frankly concerned about Senator Warren is that she really is just as protectionist as he is.
You know, DJ, I've been wanting to talk to you about this in our constant messaging. You talk about trade protectionism and you have a very distinct viewpoint. However, keeping in mind that elected officials are there to represent the interests and desires of constituents, it appears that we are in a place, in a phase of history, where Americans actually are interested in a tad more protectionism. Is it not a responsible thing for presidents to do the will of the people, even if the will of the people is not the will of DJ McGuire?
Well, whether the will of DJ McGuire is the right thing is a matter for everyone to debate. But I would go all the way back to Edmund Burke when he ran for re-election for the British Parliament in 1774, and he told the electors of Bristol, "I am not going to substitute your judgment for mine, because I think when an elected official does that, he does not help his constituents; he injures them." You are voting for a person to represent you, to speak for you, and that is someone who should be bringing his talents to do what he thinks is best for the country and best for you, the people who elected him, not to simply repeat what you want to be done as a parrot. He didn't exactly use that term. However, I would also challenge the notion that the American people prefer protectionism now or in this moment. In fact, Donald Trump's tariffs are unpopular. This actually surprises me as I say this. And data from the Pew Research Foundation has shown that free trade agreements are more popular now than they were in 2016, and that, in fact, they are more popular among Democrats than they are amongst Republicans. And this is something Democratic elected officials need to come to terms with.
DJ, you made a very good point, and I'm going to rephrase it. I think the mistake that Democrats have made in the past, and certainly made in 2016, is trying to micro-dissect their candidate to find a candidate who agrees with them on every detail of every single policy. And when you do that, you end up eliminating everyone. And I think what Democrats should be doing now is trying to find a candidate who represents, you know, for each individual, 70 to 80% of what you can live with, not 100%, because there's no one, unless you're, you know, an Ocasio-Cortez aficionado and you're a far left, I don't like to use the word socialist, but a far left progressive, then maybe you will find someone in the mix who hits all of those notes. But short of that, I think it's important that, yes, maybe she is a little bit more protectionist than the ideal Democratic presidential candidate if we were building one from scratch. But we have to live with the human beings that are going to be available to us. There are going to be 20 of them, and none of them are going to be perfect. Some are going to be too old. Some are going to be too left. Some are going to be too inexperienced. And some are going to have other limitations. So, DJ, you know what? If it was a choice between Elizabeth Warren and Donald Trump, I know who you'd pull the lever
for.
Yeah,
that's not a choice.
That's not a choice.
Right. So the question is, who is best, you know, situated to defeat this man? Because defeating him must be the ultimate goal and the ultimate achievement. That we want to thank our listeners for listening to this lovely little podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at #MPUPodcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/MorePerfectUnionPodcast and share our link on your Facebook timelines so your friends can discover us as well. And if you liked our little debate here and think that maybe you have some points you'd like to share with us, we're all in a debate group on Facebook called Open Fire Politics. Why don't you check it out? We're all there, and we'd love to see you there and debate with you too. Guys, who do you think is going to be the next Democrat to get in, and what do you see coming down the pipe for the next week?
Well, I don't know about that, but I'm going to start using the term exploratory committee more often. Like, I'm going to say stuff like, when my wife asks me to clean the garage, I can go and say, well, I'm going to form an exploratory committee about cleaning the garage, and then we'll get back to you with facts and figures and see what the will of the people say about me cleaning the garage.
So you get funding for your exploratory committee. I don't think you should step into a project.